just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 524. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by no one. I'm here all by myself today, except with my wonderful guests. You are listening to me on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. This streams live, as it always does, at koop.org. You better not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
An old man is queer.
It is Wednesday, July 10th. 2019. On the show today, we have the City Theater Company and their production of Tempest, and Zilker Productions will be on here talking about The Little Mermaid. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, Chicago, New York, Albany, and Nassau, Bahamas. Do not go away.
He walks like he's smoothing out bumps in a rug. For hours, he'll stare.
It's not easy getting old. Hello, everybody. It's Lisa Sheps. As I said before, Nicole Shiro, who I would normally be checking in something at this time, is not here. She's not well. So everybody, on my count, I would like everybody to send healing thoughts her way. Ready? Stand by. And healing thoughts, go. Awesome. She must be better. Maybe she'll come in. So it is hot outside here in Austin, Texas. And I am, we have a great show involved here. So I wanted to thank Kim Simpson for a really wonderful show about Bahamian music. Of course, one thing we did discover about Kim Simpson and I is we pronounce Bahamian differently. He says Bahamian, I say Bahamian. In my opinion, what should we do? Call the whole thing off. That's what we're going to do. But yes, indeed. So thank you, Kim Simpson. It was sort of like going down memory lane as I lived in the Bahamas, as he said on his program, for 6 months. I did a show in the Bahamas called Bahama Bound with Broadway writer and director Don Driver. And it was the most miserable experience of my life. But it was also pretty incredible. And we're hearing pieces of my computer going on in the background.
Is that like a Margaritaville type musical?
No, this was opening up a new casino in 1984 in Cable Beach in the Bahamas. And it was basically these Martians landed in the Bahamas and tried to take over. It was really crazy. I'm going to introduce everybody here that's on mics, and then I'm going to tell you a story that happened in the Bahamas, which sort of epitomizes my whole experience there. So let's see. We have Levi Gore. Hi, Levi.
Hi.
We have Emma Parsons.
Hello.
Hello, we have Tristan Evans.
Hi.
We have Scott Shipman. That microphone doesn't work right now. I got to program it.
Well, hello.
We have Jalal Goggins. Yes. Did I pronounce that properly?
Yes, Jalal Goggins.
Yeah, that's good. I didn't even look at that ahead of time. Travis Gowden.
Hey, everybody.
We're not having Cody Ross, I guess. He's not here. It's written in my thing, but don't worry.
We'll all find out together, I'm sure.
And we have Lynn Koenig, who at some point I'll get your mic to work. I forgot to pre-program it. So here's what happened in the Bahamas. So we had this big, lavish casino show. It was done by all sorts of Broadway people. We had Flying by Foy back when Flying was first starting, and we had pyro and lasers. All these things were new to the industry at the time. But we also had a number called the Junkanoo number. And Scott Simpson, not Scott, you're Scott Simpson. Kim Simpson, you're Scott Shipman. Kim Simpson just talked about Junkanoo a little while ago. Junkanoo is what I call Bahamian. Bahamian Mardi Gras, and they run around in paper costumes. They're gorgeous. So we had a Junkanoo number with actual Bahamian Junkanoo costumes, which are made out of paper. At the end of the number, there was a button. And for those of you that aren't in musical theater, the button is that, ta-da, at the end of a number, Lynn Koenig is like nodding her head. Yes, that's what a button is. Thank you. And at the button, fireworks went off, a pyro, and my job is assistant stage manager, and as soon as that happened, pyro, applause, the grand curtain came down, and my job was to come on stage with a fire extinguisher and put out the cast every night. So that was funny.
And that was in a casino, not like outdoor theater?
No, this was in a casino. Yeah, it was pretty darn amazing, if you ask me. But I survived it. Live to tell the tale. And let's see. Okay. I think I programmed that microphone. Will you talk into that microphone? We just show how the
check.
Yeah, it works. Okay, good. We show how the sausage is made here at Offstage and on the Air. I'm engineering my own show. So, you know, you just hopefully it goes. So I'm just going to transition right now from this lively discussion into kind of a maudlin thing. That song that you heard was called An Old Man. Does anybody know that song, those of us of a certain age?
I feel it, but I don't know it.
You feel it. Well, it was written by a gentleman named Martin Sharnan. It's from a show called 2x2 that did not do very well. And that was indeed Martin Sharnan singing his own song. And the reason why I played that is he passed away a couple of days ago. Most people know Martin Sharnan because of Annie. He wrote Annie. But in reading his obituary, it's amazing what he's done. And he was, by the way, 84 years old. He died of a heart attack. Annie took home 7 Tony Awards at the time, which is pretty amazing. That was his only hit. He did a myriad of other things. But here's something I did not know about Martin Sharnan. Do most people here know who he was?
I know Annie. I don't know him.
Martin Sharnan was there. He also directed about 1 million productions of it. As a matter of fact, I believe the last production he directed was in 2007, 2009, something like that. Wow. But his start was in a little show as an actor called West Side Story.
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, it's Romeo and Juliet.
Aren't they turning that into a movie or something?
They are indeed.
Yeah, which I
cannot wait for.
Steven Spielberg.
No, I'm just saying. Spielberg, that's good. And so, he started as an actor and quickly went on to doing things. One of the things that he had an interview in 1993 for the American Jewish Committee's oral history of, quote, Jews in the theater. And I'm just waiting for them to call me. Just saying. Jew, theater, that's me.
Sounds very Mel Brooksian.
Yeah. So, anyway, he went to, originally back to West Side Story. He was in a call for a show called Gangway, which was renamed to West Side Story. Scott, did you know it was called Gangway originally?
I did not.
I didn't either until
Fun
today.
Facts.
His first musical was a musical called Hotspot. The show 2x2 that we just heard is about a very famous biblical man who took some animals and put them in a boat.
Jesus.
I'm not sure.
Abraham.
No, not Jesus.
Jesus. But it was starring Danny Kaye.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So he just had an amazing life. He also did, and I did not know this, so I always like to log roll and talk about when I was on Broadway, when I did a show called Oh Brother that was a big, huge flop, played for 3 performances. But my, for the listening audience, I apologize. My computer is hooked up to the thing and the little email signal. There's it again. So I'm just going to turn the volume down. It doesn't normally do that. I thought I turned those system sounds off. So anyway. Oh Brother, 1981, was produced by a man named Zev Buffman. He had 3 shows opening on Broadway at the same time. One was a little show called Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. It was making its move from off-Broadway to Broadway. Guaranteed hit, no problem. Then he had our show, Oh Brother. We'll put a pin in that and talk about that in a second. Then he had this other show starring David Alan Grier called The First. It's a musical about Jackie Robinson, and everybody knows what a baseball fan I am, but he's the first black baseball player in the major leagues. It was a guaranteed hit. So Zev Buffman took all of his energies and put it into the first. It was a big flop. Although it didn't flop as bad as our show. They played 1 month. So what's 8 times 4? Who's into math here?
32.
It played for 32 performances roughly, and we played for 3 performances. Anyway, he wrote the first. I did not know that. All right. Well, that's Martin Charnin. May he live in peace. May he rest in peace.
Either way.
I would kind of hope he would live in peace, too. But speaking about West Side Story, this is another amazing thing and another loss. Sid Raymond, who was the orchestrator and composer of West Side Story, died. He was 100 years. Yes, Scott, yeah. You're going, isn't that amazing?
I just read that, and I was like, he was like 100 or like 101, something crazy. 100. 100,
born
exactly.
Born in 1919, which if I'm doing my math right,
that roughly, would be 100.
Yeah.
oldest time.
But he would have an EGOT if in 1957 the Tonys recognized orchestrators, but they didn't. So here's a quiz for you guys. When did the Tony organization start recognizing orchestrators as an award category?
Well, clearly far too late.
Clearly, yes. Mm-hmm. Anybody?
2012?
No.
No, it's...
No. It's in the 90s.
As
93.
94.
97, actually. But I think
oh, is that Titanic?
That's the year I was born.
Wasn't that Titanic and Ragtime?
They did it for
you
me.
You need to shut up right now.
I was but a toddler.
Yeah, me too.
yes.
That was not funny. So he had an amazing thing. So he also, and this will be good for those of us of a certain age, he did a huge part of his career doing jingles. Do you know?
No, I just miss a good jingle.
So, well, yeah. How about this one? Kind of free, kind of wow, Charlie. I can't sing. So he did the Charlie commercials. He did an Ultra Bright and another Woolite. You'll look better in clothes you trust a Woolite. That's all his. But he had this one to the Hallelujah chorus, and I'm going to sing it. How's your love? No, I'm not going to sing. How's your love life? How's your love life? Use Ultra Bright to the Hallelujah chorus. I will leave it to you singers to actually do that. But he also did, on Broadway, his orchestrations. He worked on Gypsy, I Can Get It For You, Wholesale, Forum, Bette Midler's Clams on the Half Shell Review, which I'm going to look that up. Jerome Robbins Broadway and Crazy for You. He did something interesting in his overtures. Typically, in an overture, the composer does them chronologically in the show, so they happen from the first. He didn't do that. So, for instance, he started Gypsy with "I Had a Dream." That's the beginning of the overture, which I think is an interesting and actually rather courageous thing to do at that time.
It's always interesting when you find out that something that is feels like it's normal, commonplace now had to have an origin from someone.
Yeah.
That's a really neat one that he's the one that did that, because it's so nice whenever something flows and you get that, like a good overture does some good stuff
right,
for
and
me.
Can you imagine Gypsy without those first dun, 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 dun. Exactly. It would be a different show. So I think that's an amazing thing. Here's something he did right. He wrote a TV theme. Because we're cousins, identical cousins, and you'll see, we walk alike, we talk alike. So that's the Patty Duke show. All the young people here are going, I don't know what you're talking
like,
about.
What?
His best friend that he met at age 13, Leonard Bernstein, who is the one that brought him into West Side Story. So amazing. May he rest in peace. We had a third because everything comes in threes. Rip Torn also passed away.
Yeah, I saw about that last night. He was 88. So
he had 6. Let's see if you're right.
Wasn't he?
I'm going to say yes. You normally, they have the age right at the very top. Yeah, he was 88. And most people will know him from the Larry Sanders Show.
Or the Men in Black movies.
The Men in Black movies. But oddly enough, he started doing Tennessee Williams shows. And it's like when I read that today, I went, I don't see him playing those kinds of roles. Because he's always this sort of acerbic, funny guy. But that's not how he started.
I can see him doing a Big Daddy and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Which he did. He actually, he did Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Wasn't he married to Geraldine Page?
He was. My God, you are good. he was married, I think, three or four times, and Geraldine Page was his last one. So he played, oh God, oh, I thought it said he said it, but he took over for Brick. Took over from, what's his name? Who played Brick originally? Anyway, so he did that. So on Broadway, he did The Glass Menagerie, Strange Interlude, Anna Christie, and he was also did a whole bunch of off-Broadway things. Just a fascinating man. He had, and look, I circled Geraldine Page. Just,
yeah.
Because I did not know that. He was also in The Man Who Fell from Earth. Does anybody remember that movie? No. Blank stares.
I remember the title, but I...
Oh, David Bowie.
That's the one.
It was an amazing movie. If you get a chance to look at it, I was worried I wasn't going to have anything to talk about, and I've not gotten very far. So he did The Man Who Fell from Earth, and as Scott said, he was in the Men in Black movies, but he passed away. He will be missed. I really enjoyed his performances. He evidently had a that gruff persona that he played was true. He got in fights. He was evidently kind of difficult to work with.
Yeah, I heard he was a rabble rouser.
So rabble rouser, and he hit rouser people and things. Rabble. He's rousing the rabble. All right, so that's it for the deaths. We're done for now. Has anybody seen the trailer for Judy yet?
Yes. Oh my God, last night.
Amazing, right?
It did not look like Renee Zellweger at all.
I think Renee Zellweger is pretty darn good.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
I think she's going to nail it.
Yeah, so, but the trailer, did you watch the whole thing, the 3 to 4 minute version?
Oh, my goodness.
So everybody here on House Right has seen it. What about over here on House Left?
I saw it trending on Twitter, but I haven't watched it
It's
yet.
Trending on
a
Twitter.
A glimpse of Liza Minnelli was in there, too.
I saw her.
Yes.
Like, I saw her.
So now, who was, so there were two kids. There was Liza Minnelli and a boy. Who's the boy?
Oh, I don't know the boy.
Who was it? So Judy Garland and Vincent Minnelli had two kids, right? I meant to look it up.
Well, where does Lorna Luft come into the picture?
I don't. I think she's after Vincent Minnelli.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Hence the not being a Minnelli. Check.
Yeah, there you go.
I believe her father was Mr. Luft.
Oh, yeah. I actually did not know that Liza Minnelli was Judy Garland's
till today,
child.
Till right now?
Like yesterday, actually. Okay. Like Travis
told
me. I was
that.
Like, oh, I'm shook.
It's true.
A Travis educated.
Yeah.
You can watch. They have a bunch of like duets on YouTube that you can watch.
Really?
It's amazing.
You should also go back and watch the Judy Garland Christmas special. Go do it. Like that's one that has become a tradition. And
yeah. Awesome. You now have marching orders. Frankie and Johnny at the Claire de Lune. Terrence McNally's play is set to close early, and that's a shame. They did not do very good at all. This is the one that starred some not very well-known people, Audra McDonald and Michael Shannon. It will have played 70, when is it closing? July 28th. 70 performances and 26 previews. It had such potential, but even with that star power, you know, most people... that want to go, or most lay people who want to go see Audra McDonald want to see her sing.
Yeah.
And this was not a musical. They were doing towards the end 20% of their potential box office. 20%. It was the lowest grossing show on Broadway on July 7th.
And it did so well last time it was on because it was Stanley Tucci and Edie Falco back in like 2002.
And it's a hilarious show.
Scott Shipman, I love that you're here. That was the next thing I was going to say.
Like the show is so funny and the characters are amazing. So it's a tragedy that it didn't do very well.
Okay, so we're talking about a different thing. Frankie and Johnny and the Claire de Lune is a Terrence McNally play.
Yeah.
No, but I love that show. Frankie and Johnny and the Claire de Lune.
Not funny. It's a serious...
Oh, I think the characters are amazing.
Oh, okay. They are amazing. I haven't
seen
it.
They're so cringy that they're just hilarious to me.
Okay. Well, you should have gone to see it. They should have billed it as a comedy. But yeah, indeed, Stanley Tucci and Edie Falco. And this version, and I did not realize this because we've heard about this in the newspaper quite a bit. Frankie and Johnny and the Claire de Lune on Broadway is the first Broadway show to use an intimacy director.
Oh,
And that surprised me because we've been hearing about intimacy directors a lot. And so these are, for those that don't know, these are, choreographers or directors that work with actors that are in intimate portrayals. They usually work along with fight choreographers and things like this. And this is just, it's especially now when we're getting a little heightened knowledge of our behaviors around one another of different genders, that we now have people to help us navigate that so that it looks like real intimacy on stage when it's two people who are most likely not intimate off stage. So I did not realize that. And now I wish there was an article in the New York Times about 2 weeks ago about the intimacy director here. Mm-hmm. And I didn't read it. And I didn't talk about it on the show because I thought that it had been used on Broadway for the past couple of years, but it hasn't.
Yeah, because I've been hearing about it, but I guess it must have been movie-related.
Well, it's movies and off-Broadway certainly using it and things like that. People here in Austin, I've gone to shows here.
Yeah.
I was in a show this year that used an intimacy director, and it was a really nice, like, interesting experience to get a different take on how to perform some of those scenes.
Were you one of the actors that they worked
with? Yes, I was.
How was the experience for you? And tell us about it.
It was really nice. It was a show that had both an intimate scene and also a fight scene. And so we had a fight choreographer who also was the intimacy choreographer. So it was
what
really
did I just
nice.
Say a second ago?
Right. So it was really nice to see those like different changes of dialogues when you're working with scenes. Because it's very similar. You handle both scenes very similarly. Like, you outline guidelines and boundaries and things like that. And so it was very comforting to kind of have that extra voice to guide us through it as we choreographed.
So you feel like it was very helpful. It really made a difference.
I loved it. Yeah.
Probably
helped the performance a lot because I think it makes you both feel much more comfortable in a setting that maybe you don't feel comfortable in at first.
Right. So you can concentrate on what you're doing versus what you're doing.
Right.
You
know exactly. Exactly.
That was good. Yeah. You can quote that.
Don't think I won't.
Please
I
do.
To.
So the other thing that's closing is Pretty Woman. I didn't realize it ran as long as it did. It's run almost exactly a year when it closes on August 18th, along with the other, like, we had a slew of closing announcements, and August 18th seems to be the date. It will have played 421 regular performances and 27 previews, and it's closing. Cher Show is closing that day, and King Kong closed that day.
Well, who was the lead? Who was the guy in that? That wasn't Andy Carl, was it?
It was Andy Carl.
So he must have done that after.
If it's a musical made about a movie, it's Andy Carl.
Touche.
Yes, it was indeed Andy Carl. And
I don't know what you're talking about. Rocky, Groundhog Day.
It cost $17 million to capitalize that. But it does have a production in Hamburg in 2019. And they will be eating ground beef patties between bread. Anybody?
Burger.
Hamburg. It's going to open in London, and then it's got a U.S. tour, which the dates and places have not been announced. The woman in it is Samantha Barks.
Samantha Barks is a goddess on earth. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's taking over the role whatever. So, and she's a goddess. And my
she's
dog.
She's the best. I love her.
My dog likes her because her last name is Barks. Just
they
saying.
They have that in common.
All right. So now I need to choose what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about the Freddie G Fellowship real quick. I'm not going to talk about this. So there's a show with Sherry Renee Scott and what's his name? Oh, my God. Norbert Leo Butts that's getting some attention. Anyway, I had not heard of this. It's the 10th annual Freddie G Fellowship that Music Theater International does, where it honors teachers that are teaching musical theater to their students. And I believe this is high school. They get $5,000 plus this fellowship class where they take, I'm just going to read this verbatim, 4 days of classes and activities honor instructors and teachers who are working to make a difference for their students and communities through the process of staging musical theater productions in their schools and educational theater groups. This year they have master classes by director and choreographer Jeff Calhoun, Ken Billington, lighting designer, Chris Catelli, who's a director, Bob Martin, who is a writer, Matthew Sklar, composer, Broadway sound designers and consultants and directors. And what an incredible opportunity. This is sort of like the Jimmy Awards for the teachers. Yeah. and they get to do all this. Some of the past people that have worked there are Stephen Schwartz, Bjork Lee, Lawrence O'Keefe, Stephen Sondheim. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Bobby and Kristen Lopez, Lynn Ahrens, Pasek and Paul, and somebody named Bernadette Peters. And although no Texas teachers won, I'm going to read these names off just because I think they deserve to have their names heard. Lisa Nicole Kane from the Tampa Bay Performing Arts Academy in Tampa, Nicole Mann from the Anthony School in Little Rock, Ann Kessler, Curtain Call Performing Arts Center in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, Vanessa Becker-Weig from the Woodford Theater Young Artists in Lexington, Kentucky, Cody Forno, Mountain City Center for the Arts in Frostburg, Maryland, Matt Glickstein, Lanai Academy of Performing Arts in Lanai City, Hawaii, Michaela Mirodimos, the Elizabeth Pinkerton Middle School, Elk Grove, California, and Noel Arms, Poison Apple Productions in Martinez, California. So congratulations to them. That's pretty amazing. Voila. Oh, and look at us. We're let's see if there's anything I want to talk about, the very last thing. Oh, darn. This actually is a bigger conversation. We've talked about it here, but there's an article and there's a link on our website, offstageonair.com, and it talks about, we've talked about it here, but it's really becoming present and it's so important. I really kind of wanted to highlight it, and I'm going to talk a minute talking about the fact that in our arts critical arena, there are very few to none people of color. So no matter what we've done, still when we are looking at this comes from the perspective of visual arts, but it's true in theater arts as well, that the critics that are out there looking at pieces, and there are more and more pieces by communities of color, that these white men typically are giving the critical analysis of them, and they don't have a context to see it in the way that it should be seen. Therefore, many times they completely miss the mark. And one of the things that they talked about, and I will say this, and this angers me more than anything else. The New York Times had the perfect opportunity to place a person of color, or specifically, in my opinion, a woman of color, in the number two seat in the critics. But instead, at the time, they brought in, and I just lost his name. What's his name?
It's not Ben Brantley, is it?
No, Ben Brantley and Jesse Green. So they brought in Jesse Green, who's wonderful, but they missed an opportunity. The New York Times could have really been somebody that's an organization that said, you know what, we're going to give voice to voices that should have a voice, and us white people, don't get it, and we need other people. And this is sort of brought home to me when I read this article, because I saw, and they talk about Green Book in here. And Green Book, I'll give the nickel tour. Green Book was hailed early on throughout its preseason by all the white critics as this beautiful, great thing, thereby cementing its place where it eventually got the best Oscar nod. Then when critics of color started to see it, they said, well, this is really kind of the white savior thing, and it's not as great as you think it is, and seeing it from that context, but their voices weren't loud enough nor able to be heard enough to make a difference. I was one of the people that after I saw Green Day afterwards, after a lot of the hullabaloo, and I loved the film, and I didn't see it till really today how it can be construed as a white savior film when the protagonist, the smart one of the pair, is the black guy. But it is. It still is, because he wouldn't have gotten where he'd gotten, the protections he'd gotten, if he wasn't protected by his white savior. So I think I can't say this enough, we need to do a better job of getting the voices, the critical voices of people of color out there, because there's so much work out there that's not getting recognized to the extent that it should get recognized, because we, include myself in this thing, can only see from, and it's not our fault. We can only see from our own experience. So it's up to us in places of power to say, you know what? I'm not going to criticize this. I'm going to get a person of color to come in and criticize this for me, because they can see it from different perspectives.
Even this year, too, for Brie Larson's movie Captain Marvel, she did a really cool thing where for all her press junkets, she refused to do a press junket for the movie if there weren't women of color and people of color in the criticism in the room. Yeah. So it's like you see these white stars trying to do what they can in their positions to say, I recognize this problem and I'm trying to, it just needs what to happen I can with do. A lot more people. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. And I often feel like it really is something that just goes over some people's heads, mm-hmm. you know, like it's just a miss and like they don't really think about it. So that's why it kind of gets overlooked in a lot of senses.
Right. And a lot of it's not, a lot of it, I'm going to guess, a lot of it is not malicious.
Yeah, not at all.
But it's unthinking and mm-hmm. we need mm-hmm. to be more present. Mm-hmm. We have a responsibility to
it's
do that.
It's ignorant.
Well, it's ignorant, you know. But not in a completely negative way, because a lot of people don't see it.
Yeah,
like,
no,
you know, like again, from my own point, after I already knew, I heard the arguments about Green Day, but when I saw the movie, I didn't see it. It wasn't today that I had a little aha moment and I could see it now, but I couldn't. And I like to think I'm well-meaning. Listen, we got to take a little break. And what are we going to listen to? This is a song from a show called Adrian Mole. Does anybody know the books about Adrian Mole?
I know the character name. I've heard of it, but I don't have.
Evidently, it's
reference.
It's a big time book in England.
In the UK, yeah, yes. It's off in the West End right now.
Yes. Yep. Well, so this is called "Take a Stand." We'll be right back.
I don't show him
we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. Okay, I'm going to ask the studio to please be quiet when we're on the air. I told you before the show that I would publicly shame you, and look, I did it. So you're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. Nicole Shiro is out. We've been talking to some wonderful, wonderful folks. We're going to take a quick side tour here, and I'm going to ask Emma to please give me a number between 2 and 54.
22.
Let's see what that is.
Hi, I'm Holland Taylor, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM.
Holland Taylor. I was just talking to Nicole Shiro about Holland Taylor today. So good choice. Good pick. It's okay. Levi got it. The microphone fell down. Everything's going crazy here today. The reason why the music didn't happen before is, remember, I was hearing my computer and I told you I'm going to turn the volume down. Well, I never turned it back up. But I've turned it back up now. So we're going to talk about the City Theater and a show by newcomer William Shakespeare called The Tempest. And we have the director here with us, Levi Gore. Hi, Levi.
Hello, Lisa.
And we have two of the actors, Emma Parsons.
Hello.
And Tristan Evans.
Hi.
You're doing The Tempest. So why The Tempest? Why now?
Why The Tempest? I love The Tempest.
Okay.
It's a beautiful story of redemption and forgiveness. It's a bunch of...
And sexism.
Yeah, it's sexism. There's all this other stuff.
Ableism.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Colonialism.
All that stuff.
All that fun stuff that's...
And magic.
Magic, yeah.
And magic.
Because you can't have one without the other.
No, you can't.
But yeah, the story is still very relevant. It's Shakespeare, so it's always themes of that. And the ideas of finding... So there's a line that Miranda has called Brave New World. And I've kind of used that as a jumping off point for saying we don't need to no longer be looking at the past. That feeds into the redemption nature of it, and shine away from thinking as Prospero's pure revenge until he realizes he can forgive and he'll be fine.
So give us the people you just threw out, the names Miranda and Prospero. Who are these people? Give us the nickel tour of the plot.
All right, so spoiler alert. The show...
If people haven't read it by now.
If they haven't read it.
You had your chance.
The show, the eponymous Tempest, happens in the very first scene. Prospero is usurped Duke of Milan, who's also a sorcerer. His brother came in and shipped him out to sea with his daughter Miranda, and they wound up on an island in the middle of nowhere. So it happens, so happens that the other dukes that usurped him and the king of Italy is passing by. He raises a storm to get them on the island and plot his revenge upon them and get his dukedom back. And that's basically
and so on and so forth. And in traditional Shakespearean history, there are groups of people mm-hmm. and that we follow. If this were a movie, we'd be cutting to them.
Yeah, it's like four different set groups of people.
And Emma and Tristan, what do you guys play? Tristan, what do you play?
So I play Miranda, mm-hmm. Who is Prospero's daughter.
Yes.
She's been on the island her whole life. In the very beginning of the show, she starts to realize that there's actually more to who she is and who her father is than she ever thought possible. And she has been very stressed about this sea storm, and then in the process ends up falling in love with a stranded islander named Ferdinand.
Yes, who's not a bull.
Was not a bull.
Let's just be very clear about that.
Very much a person. Yes. Very much a human being. And so she kind of represents this very like naive purity and just pure love. Everything she does is good. She's a very wonderful character to be playing in this
Lovely.
Show.
And Tristan?
Emma.
Emma, sorry.
I play Ariel, who is very much not a human.
No.
And she's Prospero's like nymph fairy servant on the island, who he has sort of employed to do his tasks for him, and she also has magical powers. So she goes around and she does all of his bidding for him. And she is sort of one of the driving forces that allows Prospero to come to terms with the fact that he needs to forgive the people in his past. And she sort of helps him along that journey, and then, spoiler alert, at the end, he frees her and thanks her for her time with him.
There you go. A slave owner that's got a heart. We love that.
Gotta love it.
And awesome. You know, the character, all the characters in The Tempest, there's a whole bunch of fun ones to play. Mm-hmm. And Ariel is one of those ones mm-hmm. that's got to be just a lot of fun to play. Are you having a good time playing it?
It's so much fun. It's so interesting trying to figure out, like, physically how to move without being a human. And I had feathers glued to my
daily,
eyebrows.
By the way.
I had feathers glued to my eyebrows last night, and sort of embodying this weird creature of an island that doesn't really exist is really fun. Mm-hmm.
Cool. And so are you setting it in any particular time era? Are you setting it in the time era that Shakespeare
has? We set in the time era that Shakespeare has. Mm-hmm. It's early 1600s. It was written 1610.
Oh, I know. I was around then.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I remember. You know, you've been around for...
I don't know. Prospero and I dated for a while. Back in the day.
An original Shakespeare fan.
So you guys are ready to, you're going to do some little monologue-y things for us. Who's going to be first and set it up for us?
I will be first. This is Miranda's first monologue when she comes on the scene in Act 1. She's watched the sea storm and she's very distressed and she's very angry at her father because she thinks that he caused it.
Okay, wonderful. This is Tristan Evans doing a monologue from City Theater's production of The Tempest.
If by your art, my dearest father, you have put the wild waters in this roar, allay them. The sky, it seems, would pour down stinking pitch, but that the sea, mounting to the welkin's cheek, does dash the fire out. Oh, I have suffered with those I saw suffer. A brave vessel who no doubt had some noble creature in her, dashed all to pieces. Oh, the cry did knock against my very heart. Poor souls, they perished. Had I been any god of power, I would have sunk the sea within the earth. Or ere it should the good ship so have swallowed and all the frauding souls within her.
Awesome, Miranda.
Thank you.
You play so powerfully, which is important.
Thank you.
Because it could be played lots of different ways.
She was one of the characters that I always found really interesting because she tends to be played very almost ditzy or mm-hmm. like she doesn't know what's mm-hmm. going on. And I think she's very intelligent.
A little puppet of her father.
Yeah, she's very smart and she has her things that she wants and...
Because at face value, you read it, he controls her.
Exactly.
He controls Caliban. He controls the Ferdinand.
Right.
So in theory, and it's always played, is that, that he's the puppet master.
We've had some fun playing with the father-daughter mm-hmm. bonding in the moments that maybe Miranda has a little bit more sway over him than he likes to think.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So what's our second monologue?
So this is Act 3, Scene 3, and this is Ariel's sort of evil fairy side. So this is when she has been instructed to be a harpy for the rest of the people that have come over.
Which is an amazing costume,
shipwrecked.
By the way.
And so this is sort of her like good versus evil side.
Great. So this is Emma Parsons doing a monologue from City Theater's production of The Tempest.
You are three men of sin, whom destiny that hath to instrument this lower world, and what is in it the never surfeited sea hath caused to belch up you. And on this island where man doth not inhabit, you amongst men being most unfit to live, I have made you mad. And even with such like valor, men hang and drown their proper selves. You fools. I and my fellows are ministers of fate. The elements of which your swords are tempered may as well wound the loud winds, or with bemocked at stabs kill the still closing waters, as diminish one dal that's in my plume. My fellow ministers are like invulnerable.
Oh my. Don't want to get on your bad side, Ariel. And that was to Antonio and Gonzalo in that group?
Yeah.
Yeah, see that?
Yeah, the Lord.
Look at that as my memory.
We've sort of played with the idea that Ariel secretly would really like to be good, and she has a lot of good inside her. And her backstory, that she used to work for a very evil witch, Sycorax, and was rescued by Prospero. When Prospero asks her to do evil tasks where she has to use dark magic, she's very hesitant to do so and doesn't like that side of it, which sort of starts the whole, no, you need to be better and you need to forgive people thing.
Awesome. Well, we're out of time here, so you're opening when? Tomorrow, correct?
We open tomorrow night, yeah.
Where are you playing?
We are playing at Santa Cruz Theater on East 7th.
Okay, and where can folks go to get more information?
Folks can go to citytheateraustin.org to get more information about tickets and show dates.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you, too.
Thank you.
And we look forward to having you again, and hopefully some of you can stick around for backstage. That would be a lot of fun. Woo. Okay. That was Levi Gore, Emma Parsons, and Tristan Evans of City Theater's production of The Tempest by William Shakespeare from July 11th through the 21st at Santa Cruz Theater Center. For more information, citytheateraustin.org. We will be right back. And I just pushed a mouse button that wasn't my mouse, so... Now we will be right back.
Got no fear of the wind. Got no fear.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage on the Air with me, Lisa R. Sheps, the first. We had a great conversation with Levi Gore. Cannot pronounce your name. Oh, he's not here. Good. He'll never hear it. Levi Gore, Emma Parsons, and Tristan Evans. And now we're going to switch and we're going to talk to Georgetown Palace Theater, who we don't get on here enough.
It's actually Zilker
Theater. I have Georgetown Palace on next week. But we also don't get Zilker on nearly enough. Thank you. Well, different cities, different things. Different.
That
doesn't help me because I'm an idiot. Zilker Theater Productions, production of The Little Mermaid. And we have a whole bunch of lovely people here. We have the director, Scott Shipman.
Yes, hello.
Hello. We have Jalal Goggins.
Hi.
We have Travis Gowden.
Hello.
And we have Lynn Koenig.
Hello.
It is Koenig, right? You don't pronounce it, or is it Koenig, or is it?
Kenning.
Kenning. We do this every time, don't we? Every single time.
It's our bit,
yes. Okay, and now get that. If you're going to talk, you need to pull that microphone up to your mouth. Scott, tell us about the show, The Little Mermaid. I've never heard of it.
it's a very unknown piece. We're excited to bring it to people this year. So as most people know, this is Disney's The Little Mermaid. So it originated as the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale, and then Disney adapted it, I think, in 1988-89 to be the classic movie, and then they turned it into a Broadway spectacle several years later. And now here we are bringing it to the masses. The story, of course, of the young under-the-sea mermaid who pines for more in life and sort of has this yearning for the unknown, sees and falls in love with a man aboard a ship who turns out to be the prince of the kingdom. The ship wrecks. She saves him and decides that she wants to be with him. In order to do that, she goes to her aunt, the evil sea witch Ursula, who makes a deal that she will steal her voice, and if she can get him to kiss her within 3 days, then she can be a human with him forever.
There you go. Well, and close. Thank you for being on the show. cool. So I guess what? You're going to find this amazing. Never seen the movie.
Really?
Never, ever, ever.
Well, I have plenty like that, so I can't judge too much.
Yeah, never saw the movie. Have seen the musical several times. and love it. Actually, I love the wheelie shoes. Are y'all using the wheelie shoes?
We are not, because we are an outdoor theater in Texas, and the rain will warp the stage. So for safety purposes, we have been creative to change from the original Broadway heel.
So for those that don't know that, I mean, the wheelie shoes were used in most stage productions, and it simulates swimming.
Yeah, it's not in the script anywhere, but they did it in the original Broadway, and it was so iconic that people tend to do that whenever they do the show.
And it's a good idea, quite frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, to have that smoothness to simulate the swimming and such.
Mm-hmm. And what were you going to say, Travis?
With smooth flooring, you know.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Jalal, who do you play?
I play Sebastian the Crab, the court composer.
The court composer. You have one of the more fun songs in the show, I think, and we'll probably hear that in a little while. I play just because it's all about me, really. In my younger days, I played in Snow White and Red Rose. I played Sebastian the Unstunk Skunk. So you and I have that in common. We both don't stink. Right?
Smell lovely.
And Travis, who do you play?
I play Prince Eric. He is the monarch and the love interest of the show, I guess.
Awesome. And because I have a story about everything, one thing I didn't say at the very top of the show, when we were talking about Bahamian music, one of the big Bahamian bands is King Eric and his Knights. So if you know, you have that to aspire to.
It's after the marriage, you know?
That's true. So how has it been? Are y'all are out, you haven't opened yet, but you're out there on the stage right now.
Yeah,
right?
We've been out there for a couple of weeks. Out in the park itself.
Yeah, it's a little toasty out there, isn't it?
When it's not a deluge of rain, yes. Mm.
Yeah, we've been doing our fair share of rain this year.
Yeah, we got some back and forth going on.
Yeah. But the good news for you guys is the dressing rooms are now air conditioned.
This is a fact. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So how's the experience been? Are you taking any are we approaching it from a straightforward way? Are there any are you doing any tricks or anything?
Well, you know, one of the things that was important to me in the show was that just because it's a fairy tale doesn't mean that we can't treat it like the stakes are real for all the people involved. You know,
correct.
They're mm-hmm. actual real characters that have their wants and desires and problems, and so I mean they're not perfect archetypes. They each have some more depth to them, and so that's really kind of where I wanted to approach it from. You know, things like it's not just Ariel pining for a new life. Like Eric also is feeling the stress of the kingdom trying to force him to be something, and he's not ready to give up his life to be the king, you know. And it's also the thing that's great about fairy tales in general is that they stem from things that happen in real life, right? It's actual human situations. So this is also a timely show that's happening because we have, you know, a group of people, a king under the sea who is frightened of the people that are different from him. You know, the land people, he has theories about them that turn out to not be true, and that causes a lot of fear, and he operates
out of
that.
Good point, Scott Shipman.
Yeah, so
I like that.
So it we were able to treat this from a very real place, and I think that's helped make it more accessible to everyone.
I think it's important because a musical like Little Mermaid and some others that don't have hidden sophisticated humor for adults in it, it's important to then approach it in a much more grounded way, I would think, so that your work is real, and it's important to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's all well and good to have Disney spectacle, but if you rely entirely on that, there's also a lovely message. There's good characters that people can relate to. There's a story here, and so we don't want to lose all of that for flash and bang.
Well, I know we're going to hear some music, and so I want to make sure we have some time to do that. So what do we want to do first?
First, I think we should hear a little bit of Prince Eric.
Prince Eric, do you want to set that up for us at all, or do you want to just jump into it?
I will let Travis set it up.
Travis, set it up for us. You can stand, probably.
All right, I'm going
to
stand.
Yeah, your music director wants you to stand.
And I'm standing. All right.
So set it up for us.
Okay, so I have actually just fallen off a ship and almost drowned, and I was saved by someone that I didn't really clearly see. And she was beautiful, and I want to hear her voice again. I'm enamored with it, and hence the name of the song. I'm still looking for her. It's been a little bit of time after, and I'm still looking for her on the coast.
Awesome. So this is Travis Gowdens doing a song from Zilker Productions' production of The Little Mermaid.
Where did she go? Where can she be? When will she come again? Calling to me, calling to me, calling to me. Somewhere there's a girl who's like the shimmer of the wind upon the water. Somewhere there's a girl who's like the glimmer of the sunlight on the sea. Somewhere there's a girl who's like a swell of endless music. Somewhere she is singing, and her song is meant for me. And her voice, it's sweet as angels sighing. And her voice, it's warm as summer sky. And that sound, it haunts my dreams and spins me round until it seems I'm flying. Her voice.
Beautiful. Travis, I just love hearing your voice. Travis and I worked together in 2015 when we did Parade, and he opened and closed the show with his beautiful voice.
Mellifluous.
Yes, it's hard for me to say. I should say, I didn't say at the beginning, this, the piano, the lovely piano music you're hearing behind is being played by the music director, Lynn Kinning, who I will always mispronounce the first time we worked together. So what's the second song we're going to do?
We got some crabby action here with Sebastian.
Crabby.
That was crabby. My sorority name in college.
Crabby. So for those like you, Lisa, who have not seen the movie, there is a somewhat famous song called Under the Sea.
Yes.
Is that? But we're not going to do that for you.
You
we're going to leave that as a teaser for anyone who wants to come see it. So Jalal, why don't you give this one a little intro?
Yeah, so for this song, this is basically Sebastian trying to, in a way, use his crabby powers to help Ariel to seduce Prince Eric so that she is able to complete her mission of, you know, getting the kiss and falling in love and, like, being able to stay human forever. So this is the, you know, the setting for them in the lagoon to kind of be chill and everything so that he may kiss the girl.
Wonderful. This is Jalal Goggins singing a song from Zilker Theater's production of The Little Mermaid.
There you see her sitting there across the way. She don't got a lot to say, but there's something about her. And you don't know why, but you're dying to try. Go on and kiss the girl. Yes, you want her. Look at her, you know you do. Possible she wants you to. There is one way to ask her. It don't take a word, not a single word. Go on and kiss the girl. Sing with me now. Sha-la-la-la-la-la, my oh my, look like the boy too shy, ain't gonna kiss the girl. Sha-la-la-la-la-la, ain't it sad, ain't it a shame, too bad, he gonna miss the girl.
That is such a pretty song. I do love that song. So I haven't. I did not see the movie, but I did see the show, and so I know that song. It's one of my favorites. And typically, when we play it on the show, that's the one I typically play because it's just so beautiful and mellifluous.
There we go.
All that stuff.
But we are talking Disney, so if you said Maleficent, sure, people would understand.
It's all relevant. It's all relevant.
So when do you guys open?
We actually open in just a couple of days on Friday, the 12th.
July 12th, my brother's birthday.
Oh,
well, that's
why I'm probably doing it for
it's
him.
A celebration.
And how long do you play?
We play for several weeks. I believe it's 6 weeks through August 18th, 17th.
Through the 17th. And this plays out at the Hillside Theater in Zilker Park.
Yep.
And what time does it start? Do you operate it on sundown, or do you have time before sundown?
So it is on sundown, but the official start time is 8:15. Because we find that's when the sun set has provided us enough darkness that we can begin things in.
It's actually a wonderful thing to see things out at the Hillside, and you watch, you know, little by little, you can start seeing the lighting, which is sort of fun. Yeah. And it happens so softly, or so slowly and beautifully. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And stay cool out there on on the Hillside. I know you got major crowds. And
all the sweat.
Good. Well, and again, I'm hoping that some or all of you can stick around for backstage.
Lovely.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was Scott Shipman, Travis Gowda, and Jalal Goggins. I cannot talk. And Lynn Kinning of Zilker Productions, production of The Little Mermaid by Alan Menken, who wrote the music, Howard Ashman and Glenn Slater, lyrics, and Doug Wright, who wrote the book. It plays July 12th, my brother's birthday, through August 17th at the Zilker Hillside Theater. For more information, zilker.org. We will be right back. Come on. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. We had a wonderful conversation with the folks over at Zilker Summer Musicals, whatever I want to call it. I don't think they call it Zilker Summer Musicals anymore, but we talked to them. We skipped our local section, as you saw, because I want to make sure we gave our guests time to talk. But I did want to talk about Spectrum's production of Pipeline that's happening July 12th and 13th at the Dougherty Arts Center. You can get more information about that at the Spectrum website, which I'm searching for, but I'm sure it's spectrum.org. It's in here somewhere. Maybe not. Oh, yeah. SpectrumATX.org. And this is a powerful and passionate, intelligent song play by Dominique Morris, directed by Jeremy Rashad Brown. It says, as a mother's hope for her sons clash with the educational system rigged against them in Pipeline, the riveting new play by Dominique Morisseau. So check that out if you would like. You may find information at spectrumatx.org. Well, I did it, folks. I was able to do an entire hour without Nicole Shiro, but it was not easy. So, Nicole, you have to come back. That is not an out. I also do want to do a special thank you to our ex-co-host, Nick Mayo, who is back in New York and just did the Pride plays. I just keep hearing more and more things about that series of readings done at the Rattlestick Theater in New York City. So coming up next is Austin Theater, Austin Modern News. If you're listening on terrestrial radio, if you're listening on the podcast, and you should by going to offstageonair.com and signing up, you will be hearing Backstage at Offstage. And what are we going to listen to as we go away? Oh, I believe we're going to hear more of Martin Charnin. This is him singing his own music. We'll see you next week, folks. Bye.
It's the hard knock life for us. It's the hard knock life for us. Instead of treated, we get tricked. Instead of kisses.
Okay, the curtain has just come down on Stage Voice, the musical. The story of a young troupe of actors trying to be heard in the din of an ocean theater with no microphones.
Oh.
That's it. Anyway, so the show has come down. We've left the backstage area. We're standing out here by the dumpsters and all the construction material because, you know, here at the theater, there's always construction going on.
Mm-hmm.
And back here, we have Tristan Evans. Hi, Tristan.
Hello.
Emma Parsons.
Hello.
Scott Shipman.
Hello.
Jalal Goggins. Couldn't do yours without looking at the thing. And Travis Gowden.
Hello.
Next time I'll do it without the paper. Count on it. I never know. I can't even say my own name without doing the paper. Well, welcome to Backstage, you guys. Scott, you've been back here before, haven't you?
I have indeed, yes.
Yeah. So we know everything there is to know about you.
Most people do, yeah.
So Emma, I can't help but notice that you have some kind of accent. Where's that from?
I'm from England.
I've heard of that place. Are you from the London area? Are you some...
No. Actually, coincidentally enough, I'm from Stratford-upon-Avon.
Okay.
Which is nice. Where the bard is from.
Oh, I don't know him. I know Shakespeare. Are they related?
And I grew up in the U.S., so I have sort of a weird hybrid American-English uh-huh. accent. But yeah, I'm from the U.S.
Awesome. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then moved to Austin, Texas, and now I live in Chicago. So we're sort of all over the place.
Oh, where in Chicago do you live?
I live in the South Loop. I go to school there.
Okay. I lived in Chicago for 10 years. When I first moved there, I lived in Burnham Park Plaza.
Oh, nice.
And then moved to Wicker Park.
Uh-huh. I love Wicker Park. Me too. Wicker Park is my dream area to
have
be.
You, so this is the show about Chicago. Have you ever been to Club Lucky's?
I haven't.
You must go. Good Italian food, great martinis. It's in Bucktown on Wabanzia Street.
Okay, I have a few years before the martinis are allowed.
Okay, but... well, go eat the Italian food. It's really quite delicious. Yum, and by the way, I hate you for that. That's right. You were the one that was born in 1997
1999.
She's behind me. Oh, I was even before her.
Oh, my gosh. 1999. Oy vey, Mayor. Okay, so how old were you left when you left Stratford-on-Avon?
I was 2, so the fact that I even still have an accent is not real.
Well, but that says that's a lot of things. Right?
Mm-hmm. Isn't that home life? Like, do your parents
have? My parents have really, really strong accents. Yeah. There are several conspiracy theories that my accent is fake.
By whom?
I've started to find the people that think it's fake and gradually start slipping into an American accent with them, just to sort of like spur them on even further. But no, it is real.
Well, I think that also, there is so much that your brain absorbs in those first 2 years anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So even though you weren't talking probably a whole bunch at 2 years old, you were certainly listening for 724 days. I don't know. I didn't do the math.
Yeah, my mom said I started talking and didn't stop.
So you went from, and I was only half listening when you were talking. You went from England to where?
I went from England to Pittsburgh. Pennsylvania. Right. Was there for a few years. My parents came to Austin on vacation and bought a house on their third day of vacation.
Lovely. Here, so did you go to high school here in Austin?
I did.
Did you, what high school?
I went to Westlake.
Westlake. And were you a participant of the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards?
I was not. No.
Are you a musical theater?
We didn't participate. Westlake was not part of that.
They do now.
They do?
Yes.
Oh.
They're big. They're big winners. So, well, good. Well, and where did you find your love of theater? Where did that come from?
I started when I was very young, started singing and started dancing and was like, oh, I'll start doing musical theater. And then throughout that sort of found that acting was definitely like where my passion was. And the more I was on stage, the more it just felt right. And
by the way, you can do all three.
Thank you. Thank you. That's good to know.
And as a young performer, I would tell you it's important. If you want to make a life, you have to do all three.
And I still dance and I can sing, but definitely like live theater, and especially Shakespeare is definitely where I find.
And where do you see yourself going? What's the goal?
So the goal is Chicago Shakespeare, mm-hmm. just because that's where I'll be anyway.
And you'll be there right at the Navy Pier.
Yeah. So that's the goal. I've seen a few. I saw Hamlet there at the end of in May, and it was blown away.
Just did something there last month that was supposed to be amazing. I can't remember what it was, but it got amazing reviews.
Currently, they're doing Sixth the musical, which is actually not a Shakespeare, but I'm obsessed with that show. So amazing. That's about to close, I think, later this month.
My ex-business partner saw it on the West End.
It's fantastic. I'm seeing it in London in a couple of weeks. I'm so excited.
But Chicago Shakespeare.
So Shakespeare. All right, so here, I'm going to give you some sage advice around this triple threat business.
Okay.
If you want to be in this business, you should be continuing voice lessons, mm-hmm. continuing taking dance class and acting classes, and exercise all three of those muscles, because especially if you want to make it to New York or Chicago, mm-hmm. it's really important. You really, as someone who was a one, you limit yourself so greatly. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could do, from a theatrical standpoint, I wish I could do that all over again. And I would have sat in Patsy Swayze's jazz ballet company for a lot longer learning how to move well, because I didn't. Well, cool. And so you currently live in Chicago. You're in school?
Yes. I'm in school there.
Which school?
I go to the Chicago College of Performing Arts at Roosevelt University.
Okay, Roosevelt. So mm-hmm. down on Michigan Avenue. Are
yes.
you down there?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. That's where my office is.
Nice.
Right on 10th and Michigan.
Give me a visit.
Well, it used to be there. They fired me. My own company. I got fired. It's a whole nother story, everybody. but that's awesome. I have you been to Chicago enough to love it?
I hadn't actually been there when I decided that's where I was going to mm-hmm. move. I just finished my first year, so I'm baby there.
It's a great town. They clearly have wonderful theater there, and so mm-hmm. I would other than Chicago Shakes, I would really get over to the Victory Garden, get uh-huh. over to Steppenwolf and all those. And our very own Topfer Theater at Zach was modeled after Steppenwolf's theater.
Really?
Mm-hmm. True story.
Mm-hmm. more you know.
Yes. Dun, 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 dun. I was just going to talk to you, Travis.
Oh.
What's your story? Well, you were, when last we met 4 years ago, you were in school at Texas State, one of the top musical theater schools in the country.
Yeah. I actually am from Fredericksburg, Texas.
They have peaches
town.
There.
They have peaches and wine.
They do.
Because you need all that to deal with the white privilege. No, I'm sorry. You do. You need the wine and the peaches to deal with it. But either way, I grew up there for about 18 years. I actually started doing theater pretty young, about fifth grade. And it was because I was watching my mother do theater. She actually was a part of the community theater that they started up in Fredericksburg.
Oh, is she still doing that?
She is. She's every now and again, she'll bring herself out for a show. She actually just recently started doing some teaching from home to where she can do a little more in her afterlife. And well, not like afterlife. You know what I mean by afterlife. Her home life, not work life. But yeah, she every now and again she'll take on a role. She just has to get the confidence and have the time, because I do have a little brother who's about 12. But I actually went to Texas State, like we talked about. I was not an MT group person. No. And the irony there is that it's because I also would like to be a triple threat actor, but my order of operations went from singing to acting to dancing.
Okay.
So the dancing usually does hinder me a little bit, but I've learned a lot in my training in Austin over the years. But yeah, it eventually brought me to Austin through San Marcos, and that's kind of how I made my way into the theater world here.
Well, awesome. I'm thrilled to see you. I was like very excited to see Travis's name. He worked, as I said before, on Parade at Ground Floor Theater, and I was under the misunderstanding that he had left town, and so and here he is.
I was just quiet. That's all.
You were just quiet. Don't be quiet.
No, be loud.
You can't be. I try to model that, and I don't. So Scott Shipman, what's up with you?
What is
it? I have not seen you in a while.
Yes, I've been sort of quietly busy behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So
a couple, directing more, much
yeah,
more.
And part of that's because I was in a Zilker show a couple years ago when last time I was here, I think, was when we were doing Wizard of Oz.
Oh my.
And a week before it opened, I snapped my Achilles tendon during rehearsals.
I remember that,
and,
yes.
And had to be replaced. And so then I couldn't do stuff for a while. And so I took the slightly more chair-based position of directing some things. That's a lie.
We have different styles.
The boys who work with me know that that's an absolute lie. I'm constantly on my feet as we're doing it.
Always.
But yeah, so I've directed up in Georgetown, and I directed Shrek at Zilker a couple of years ago, and they asked me to come back for Little Mermaid this year, and I'm going to be directing at Austin Playhouse coming up in the fall. We're doing She Loves Me up there, and so.
Oh, great. I didn't know you were doing She Loves Me. That's great.
So I'm keeping busy, but not on stage quite as much as historically I had been.
Well, that's good. And you you've always had your feet in so many different pies. I've seen you performing at St. Ed's. I've seen you performing in all the stages around. And so I'm glad that you're spreading your wings and getting directing. How do you like directing versus performing?
I very much enjoy it. And just because I like to approach it from the actor's standpoint of, you know, creating. You know, when you're an actor, you have your role that you get to work on, you know, and it's always the very famous, you don't give other actors notes, you don't give other actors suggested things,
right.
But to have that collaboration aspect, to work with every person, to have a cohesive show is very exciting for me, and then you get to also be like, ooh, and how can we make the set work and write with this, and let's talk to the music director, and can we cut that because we hate that, but we can do this instead, and it's just, it's a whole way more like responsibility that comes with it, so lots of more stress that comes with it,
right?
You know, when you're an actor, you can be like, oh well, whatever this show is, I can just focus on me and do the best I can do,
right.
But when you're a director, it's sort of like
I kind of where the buck stops.
I have to focus on everything,
yeah.
And if one part of it is not up to snuff, that's kind of my responsibility, right. Still,
but the reward of that is that, as I explain to people, is like as an actor, when you take that bow, you get that feeling of this great feeling of this accomplishment that you've just done. As a director, you feel that times the amount of actors, times the amount of designers,
yeah.
Times the amount of carpenters. I mean, you feel it for just about every role.
Absolutely.
It's an amazing feeling.
You just sort
feeling.
Of glow like a proud parent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you've performed and you've directed.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take your stab at writing next?
Well, I do write, not musical theater or mm-hmm. theater. Well, that's not true. I've written a couple of shows. I just don't show them to anyone.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. So I do enjoy writing very mm-hmm. much. I did, for a brief stint, I did some stuff for Broadway World, you know, some reviews and whatnot.
I did that too. Actually, I did exactly one.
Yeah, I did. Well, for me, I did like three or four, and then I got to the point that whenever friends that were in shows that I was going to knew I was coming, they would start like trying to preface before I went and saw it, and I was like, I don't want people to not want me to go support them. Like,
right.
So
yeah, it was fraught for me too, because I tend to be hypercritical to begin with, and I want people to come on the show and feel like they want to come on the show and not have. So I did exactly one. Fortunately, it was a show I enjoyed, so that was good. Well, awesome. And so just one of the things I always ask people that are veterans to backstage, mm-hmm. What are your passions outside of theater?
Oh, I wish I had a life.
I'm not saying about life. I'm just, what's your passion? Do you, you know, maybe you arrange flowers or make beer.
Those are two common things. Slightly more simple than that. I have a cheese club.
So that is amazing. You have a cheese club? You're head of the cheese club?
I started one. You're the head cheese? Friends. Yeah, indeed.
The big cheese.
No, it's real fun. We started a couple of years ago, and it sort of flagged, and we're looking to get it back up again. But I do that, and then...
Well, wait, I want to be a member of your club. What do I do?
We'll let you know.
Do I go to a party, and I eat cheese?
Well, so it started at work, and it was just three of us, and we all just wanted to know more about stuff. And so we made a list of cheeses that we divided up, and everyone had some, and then we would get together once a week, and we would rotate who hosted it, and what we would do... is the person who was hosting had to make dinner featuring one of their cheeses, and then someone who was hosting next time would bring an appetizer featuring one of theirs, and the person who hosted last time would do a dessert with one of theirs.
Oh, my God. I am so there.
And so part of that was also we would research it like Roquefort can only be called Roquefort if it's aged in one of these six specific caves in this region of France.
Oh, my God. I actually knew that, by the way.
Yeah.
My grandfather had one of the very few Roquefort dressings that were legal in the United States.
So it was fun to be able to take stuff that historically, like, I'm not a giant blue cheese fan, to find how I could actually enjoy it and what pairs things. And so we would pair it with fruits and with meats, and this wine goes particularly well with this one, and how does it change?
Jalal is going crazy right now.
I love blue cheese.
Everything. Do you love blue cheese?
Everything. Blue cheese is everything.
Have you tried Camenzola?
I don't think so.
Actually, Camenzola, I think, is more for not a blue cheese lover, but a blue cheese...
The initiate.
Yeah, because it's camembert with a line of blue cheese in the center. So you've got that smooth, lovely camembert, and then this pound of blue cheese in the center. It's delicious.
Pro tip. Are you accepting new members anytime soon?
Right?
I'd love to be in this cheese,
This is about to explode.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a lot of people listen to this show.
A meeting venue. No, but a pro tip for anyone who doesn't like blue cheese, pair it with a small piece of pear and a dollop of honey, and it totally changes the palate.
I did. We'll get off the cheese stuff in a second. But, you know, I went to culinary school, and in the cheese section, or in the wine and the wine section of our education, we paired wines with different foods, and we tasted it before and after the food, and it does. It's amazing.
It absolutely changes. The other side of things, that's sort of the more highbrow, I suppose, aspect of things. And then I also enjoy reading, telling stories, and so I also have enjoyed video games in my downtime because they have started telling stories much better than in the past.
That's true. So, are you a storyteller? Are you a performance storyteller? She asks selfishly.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Like the moth. Do you tell stories on stage?
Oh, do I tell stories? I haven't yet. Well, no one's asked me to.
We have the Bulb Story Slam. Look it up. BulbStorySlam.com. At the theater, once a month, we do storytelling. Okay. And I've actually been quite amazed with the level of storytelling here in Austin. It's a really, really wonderful storytellers. Jalal, you are so animated, and you look like you're having so much fun.
I am.
Where do you come from? We haven't met before, right?
No.
What's up with that?
Well, I'm originally from Buffalo, New York.
My ex-business partner is from Grand Island, New York.
Nice. But I've been in Austin for about 11 years now.
Did you move here when you were 11?
No, I moved here, I think, when I was around 14 years old with my family.
Okay, that's close to 11.
Yeah. But I came here, I graduated from Austin High School, and then I went to get my music degree at Houston Tilton University.
Awesome. How's their music department?
Oh, it's really cool. It's a private university, and mm-hmm. it's kind of intimate. So our music department is really small, but I was able to get a lot of thorough education as far as like my training there. So it's really cool.
Well, and you got to be, because it's one of the few historically black I don't know what they're called.
HBCUs
mm-hmm. in the country, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's right here in our backyard. And I mm-hmm. think that's really, really important. I'm glad they have a guy. I didn't know how strong they were in the arts, and yeah. that makes me feel good to know that.
Yeah, our actually the only arts we have is the music department. Yeah. Whenever I in my last year, they were trying to look to kind of expand it to like visual arts and dance and theater and everything.
So. When my theater got shut down, I looked at their church is the theater.
Yeah,
And we looked at moving in there for a short time. We didn't do it though. It's a beautiful little space. So what got you into theater? Where did that start?
That actually started when I was a little kid in Buffalo. My mom had sent me to a summer like program for young kids who wanted to start getting into theater. Funny enough, like we started off with musicals, and that's kind of where my love of like music started. And so I drifted more from like acting and just stuck with music until I got to Austin, and that's when I started to really flex my my acting.
Well, I'm gonna give you the same advice they gave Emma. All three.
Yeah.
All three. It's so important.
Yeah, because I mean I'm really into dancing as well. Like my sister is a professional ballet dancer and everything like that. So
who does she dance for?
She isn't in dancing anymore.
Okay.
She trained to do it. Okay. She auditioned for Alvin Ailey, a dance company and everything. Okay. And she she really got me into dance, and so acting unfortunately took a back burner until
dance is beautiful. Have you seen Immortal Longings at the Zac?
No, I haven't.
Interesting show. Have you seen it, Scott?
I have not seen it yet.
No. Beautifully produced, but it's about the Ballet Russe and Nijinsky.
Awesome.
And stuff like that. So it's very interesting from a dance perspective. So it's good. Dance is something I wish I had done more of. Tristan, what's your story?
I was going to say, speaking of dance, I actually started dancing when I was 3, so that was the first type of like performance thing that I ever did.
Where did you take dance?
I'm from Amarillo, Texas, way up north Texas.
Took the bus from Amarillo.
That one? By morning. Uh-huh. That's the one. And so I danced with a studio out there called Dance Arts in Amarillo. And so I did that first.
You know, I took a company of Joffrey Ballet through Amarillo, Texas.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, well. We didn't perform there. We just drove through.
Just drove through. It's like Amarillo's claim to fame is that everyone's driven through it at some point. And it's really good food if you ever stop while you're
Well,
driving.
Except, but just there isn't much else. I will counter that. I was like so proud because it's my home state. And I said, we're going to stop while we're in this little sliver of Texas and we're going to get some Mexican food because that's what we do. And it was terrible.
Oh, you went to the wrong place then. Clearly,
I did.
There's so many good spots.
Clearly, I did. Well, this was in 1983, so maybe
some of it just really exploded since then.
Yeah, no, I've heard actually really. I haven't spent any time in Amarillo, but I know it's a pretty cool scene. And actually, oddly enough, it's got a very big LGBTQ scene there.
We do, yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a really great arts community as well. Like the Amarillo Opera is amazing. Amarillo Little Theater is fantastic as well. So it was really nice to grow up there and kind of be able to explore a lot of different things.
And you
things.
Did theater in Amarillo?
I did. I did theater through my high school, Amarillo High. Did it there, and I was also in our a cappella show choir there as well, which was really fun.
I love a cappella.
I can snap like a just
can you?
Crazy
I can't.
All the time.
Let's hear you snap. Okay. Here, you want to hear me snap?
Phenomenal. But so I did that, and then I went to school at Southwestern in Georgetown.
Okay.
Just north of here. So I just graduated in May.
Oh, mazel tov.
Thank you. And so was sticking around in Austin for the summer and got involved in.
So where are you going after? What's next? Are you going to go?
So literally in like 12 days, I'm very excited. Literally the day after our show closes. Mm-hmm. Last summer, I performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in Scotland, which was a dream. And so I'm actually going back this year working as a marketing coordinator, doing social media and PR and photography
for
a company there. Because I graduated with a theater and business double major. And then I come back from Scotland, and then I'm moving to D.C. and I'm working in the marketing department for Arena Stage in D.C.
Oh, amazing.
Which I am crazy
How
excited
wonderful.
About.
So if you get some spare time and you want to work in the marketing department of Ground Floor Theater, I have a lovely non-paying job for you.
Hey, I'll get coffee with you. We can chat.
I would love
all
that.
All the time.
Well, that's amazing. So
Thank you.
You are marrying your love of arts and your talent along with a little businessy stuff. What do you suppose that and you're at a position in your life where you don't really have to make up your mind.
Which
but
is
what
awesome.
What are you aiming for at this point?
It's like 6 different paths, and I'm just kind of going down all of them at the same time and seeing what happens. But I my love of like the creative side of theater is so it's just that's what's always been there. So like I love performing. My degree also focused in directing as well, so I've done a lot of directing too. So if there's any way, like I love devising in new pieces, so working on things like that is just like
the dream for me is like the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is like my heaven. So if I could work in that area, that would be perfect. But
well, there's a lot of theaters, a lot of smaller theaters in DC that you could work with.
Yeah.
And you are 2 hours and 59 minutes away from New York City.
New York.
And I'm told that there's some theater there that you can go see.
And I think there's probably something that I'd like.
You should
there.
Make at least a monthly pilgrimage and take, right. you know, and rob your bank account and go.
And I have a cousin who lives in Brooklyn, so I'm sure they'll just
Lovely.
Get to see a lot of me.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's awesome. That's got to be very exciting for a lot of you guys, all of you, but me and Scott. But I mean, it's to be at that section at that point in life, and I remember when I was there, it was like 5 years ago, where it's just like everything is in front of you. So that's very exciting.
It's very exciting.
Keep working. Don't stop taking class. That's my advice.
Indeed.
Ever.
Agreed.
Well, great. Well, thank you guys for coming backstage. I really appreciate it.
Yeah,
I apologize
thank you so
much. For the smell.
What
smell? From the dumpsters.
Oh, yeah.
We're acting here, Travis. This is part of the acting part.
Oh.
Remember the dumpsters?
Well, I'm very method. So.
All right. Well,
where
we'll
is the actual
we'll
trash?
We'll sit you down on the plywood. No.
I am not. I am Laurence Olivier to your Dustin Hoffman.
Thank you for that story. I love
amazing
that story.
Which, you know what?
Amazing story.
Is an urban myth.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
But I still love
still
that
amazing.
Story.
Great.
Well, wonderful. Write Lisa at offstageonair.com and I'll tell you what that story is. Well, good. Thank you guys all for being on this show. And
thanks for
coming
having
backstage.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Every story, new or ancient, bagatelle or work of